For February the 7th, 2014, Dennis makes an announcement that will ruin the podcast forever. And then we talk about Octodad and ask you about unique control schemes. Welcome to the 50th level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level, a podcast for people who love video games. Guys, it is the 50th episode.
Woohoo!
Hooray!
We survived!
We did it! Yeah. Why is saying we did it so funny?
Because it's fun to say.
It is, yes.
And it makes you want to sing a Dora song.
Maybe. So you know, it actually might be a Dora thing. I don't know. I've never seen an episode of Dora in my life. However, that might be why people laugh when I say it. And I keep saying it because people laugh.
It's also a Star Wars reference.
What?
Leia hugging Chewie.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah.
That is some next level Star Wars knowledge right there.
Yeah, yeah. That is that is at least like a 301 level Star Wars science.
I'm getting my BA next month, so, you know.
Oh, man. I hope I get an A TSD on my test.
That was really bad even for us.
Yep.
But if an ATAT had a Twitter account, it would be at.
No, it would be at.
It would be at.
Yeah.
You could just, you know, fast track it. Whatever.
And if it worked for AT&T, well, forget about it.
Yeah. 1.5 again as times as many AT&Ts. What? I don't even know. I can't even. What? So, yeah, we've been here for 50 episodes, give or take 10 bonus levels or so. And thank you, everybody who's been around. And if you're new, you know, I guess there's room for you. I don't know.
Don't crowd our internet, all right?
Yeah. You know what? Just keep a respectful distance. Back the fuck up. No. We are very, very happy that you have been along for this ride, and this ride is nowhere near being over, as indicated by the sweet new website, if I can say.
Woohoo!
Yeah, so if you don't normally go to the website, go to duckfeed.tv to take a look at those sexy, sexy banner images. Yeah. Pretty good stuff. So,
it's like Facebook, only without all those annoying friends.
I know, right? It's like
just
us.
Four annoying friends.
Yeah. Oh, man. Can we crash on your couch? Yeah. So
wait a minute. That's happened to one of us.
Oh, yes, it has. Yes, it has. I said it and then I realized it and I was like, oh, that kind of sucks. that's in the past now. But what's in our future is another just fantastic episode. We're not doing anything special for it aside from marking the occasion. It's just going to be more of what we usually give you, which is talking about some news, talking about some things we've been playing. And then we have a multiplayer question about control schemes. Riveting stuff. let's do a little section break here and come back with
the brief.
Hey guys, it's time for the brief, which is the section where we talk about news, things that are happening in this world around us. Do you guys mind if I go first?
Not at all.
So Nintendo,
I demand it.
only I can demand things. So Nintendo, they hurting.
Mm.
Yeah, they hurting bad. So on the tails of announcing a 30% profit slump for Q4, or sorry, it was their third quarter results from last year, they decided to slash executive pay, including Satoru Iwata, the current acting president, taking a half pay cut for the next 5 months while they try and get their house in order. And the big thing that kind of happened and came out today was that the family of, I always forget his first name, Hiroshi Yamauchi, the late Nintendo president and one of the founders, I believe. They sold, or part of the founding family, they sold off their stock as well, which means that, you know, as part of a buyback, so Nintendo is trying to get as much of the cheap stock off the market as possible to try and get something to raise the price a little bit.
Yeah.
The family of Yamauchi sold theirs. It was an 11.4 billion yen share buyback, which if I was a competent semi-journalist on the radio, I probably would have seen what that was like in dollars. But it's billion, so, you know, just take it down one order of magnitude.
That's what
wait, 11.7 how many?
11.4 billion yen. Yeah. Well, from Alpha. but yeah, that is really bad news. And the editorial conversation switched over to, like, you know, should Nintendo be making iOS games exclusively like that? Like, just flipping
wait,
a switch. No, like, everybody's saying, oh, they should sell off all the IP and they should totally, like, pull a Sega, or Sony should buy them, or et cetera, et cetera. Like, Nintendo has a lot of money, in their coffers. This isn't a good sign for them, but, like, I believe that they might still be cash positive from the nice, you know, Wii days, and also the DS, which I think might have been a bigger moneymaker in the long run for them. But yeah, just there's a lot of doom and gloom about Nintendo right now, based on the poor performance of the Wii U, even in the wake of, you know, games that people would consider successful, like Super Mario 3D World or you know, Legend of Zelda Wind Waker HD, stuff like that that came out towards the end of last year.
How has the 3DS been doing?
Pretty good. I don't know about sales, but like from a game perspective, like the 3DS had its best year ever last year. Like, they're like that is
it
where people want to be. Well, it's Pokemon, but it also had, you know, like the new Zelda had a new Luigi's Mansion, which I hear is, you know, pretty good. Like, they're like, there's a lot of great stuff, and it's pushing sales. And, you know, Nintendo's handhelds have never been where the problem is. You know, like, there were large stretches where the handheld division was actually propping up, you know, the N64 and the GameCube specifically, right?
Which I feel like that's kind of ironic, because the handhelds was the market that everyone was saying, like, excuse me, oh, you know, iOS games have made this irrelevant. It's going to be gone in, like, you know, 2 days or whatever.
Well, it's definitely a lagging indicator, I think. So historically, that has always been the case. And, you know, you don't hear people attributing this downturn to the 3DS, right? You always hear it attributed to the Wii U, which is a bigger gamble, right?
Has any of the journalism on this, you know, does that seem to be accurate? I mean, is that what's not selling, or?
I have no idea. So I believe that there was some kind of earnings call, but like the popular notion that I've seen in a lot of places, which doesn't mean it's entirely right, but, you know, it doesn't speak ill of the veracity, is that they pinned a lot of hope on, like, a big year for the Wii U. And it kind of got its lunch eaten by next generation consoles, right?
Well, even if they hoped the Wii U would do like a tenth of the sales of the Wii, it was still wildly optimistic.
Yeah.
You know, like the Wii was just such a runaway hit that there's no way that they, you know, expected the Wii U to do low enough compared to it to actually, you know, match reality.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and also strikes me as. Not just maybe that's, you know, not doing well, but it seems like their setup seems very fragile, if that makes sense.
Well, it kind of seems like they're lacking, like, a long-term recognition of what made the Wii successful.
Right. Well, but I'd also say, though, like, you know, the Wii wasn't... I'm saying this not to come across as hating on Nintendo, like, oh, the Wii sucks, but the Wii wasn't a good video game system in terms of, like, for playing mainstream video games. It was just a system that happened to have a bunch of very, very awesome
video games?
Platform, I was going to say.
But what I'm saying is, like, I feel like there's always going to be a much more dependable market for, like, an Xbox of the people that will get it to play the next Call of Duty, the next Madden, then I don't know. And I feel like that's kind of a t- dependable market that even if you screw up, that's going to kind of cushion it.
Yeah.
And it seems like Nintendo lacks that. It's kind of what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, whereas the audience that they made a lot of their money off of, which, you know, was people who would buy the Wii and then throw it into the closet landfill, is much more fickle, right?
Yeah. Right, and I guess also, like, I wanted a Wii. I wanted a PS3 just because I wanted to, you know, be able to play modern games, whereas I wanted a Wii because I wanted to be able to play these specific games that are awesome. Therefore, that means for them to have people keep buying, they need to keep making good games, as opposed to where the others just need to keep making all right games.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Are you saying that the library on the Wii just has to work that much harder to justify people like going in for a smaller possibility of games to play?
Yeah, I think kind of. You know, yeah, I mean, if you're buying a Wii, you're buying it for the small number of Nintendo proprietary games.
Yeah. I don't know. I need to reevaluate. So, like, my personal rubric as, you know, somebody who plays games, and, you know, there are things on the Wii U that I want to play. Like, the intersection needs to be, the thing needs to cost $200, and there needs to be 5 games that I could buy with the system, essentially, and play. Right?
Sure.
Like, it needs to be $200, and then, like, 5 things that I couldn't play anywhere else in that same form or fashion, but... Yeah, I don't know. That's my own personal qualification that I put on it. But yeah, I can see them probably flailing and acting very non-conservatively around this kind of stuff, doing like fire sales and that kind of thing. Of, you know, like let's see what sticks, which I don't think would be good for them. But
yeah, that doesn't.
I think it. You know, they, like you said, they've got cash. They kind of, it's okay, man, you had a bad generation, you'll do better next time, is kind of the mindset that I see them adopting. Like, that's what Nintendo does. They, you know, they put out a console, and if it succeeds, they, you know, it's gangbusters, and if it fails, then they kind of just bear through. And the question is, with the way that console life cycles are going, you know, can they survive on the Wii U until the market is ready for a new console?
Unless they do something like really disruptive and say, like, in 2 years, fake out, guys, we got this new one that actually is, you know, next generation or something, you know, above and beyond. But I totally don't see that happening. Like, yeah. they have signed themselves up for 8 years of this, potentially.
Yeah. Wii W.
No, I don't know. I don't know. Like, you would think, just make something with modern hardware, keep your quirky design, and keep your user friendliness. All that's cool. That's all good. And, like, maybe try and mend some third party publisher relationships. But I've got, this is all stuff that people have been saying about Nintendo for a very long time, and I kind of feel like I'm boring everybody by saying it.
No, but it's a case study of everything that's wrong.
But it's sad. I think that, you know, people who are comparing them to Sega like might be a little bit premature, because for as awesome of a system as the Dreamcast was, they were off, like, Sega was on a longer run of bad decisions and, you know, tactical errors than Nintendo has been, right? Everything post Genesis was them pounding another nail in their coffin, and, you know, Nintendo has been more successful more recently than when Sega got out of the hardware business. But
yeah,
I don't know.
I think it also, you know, I'd be interested to hear, you know, kind of some analysis of, you know, what would it look like if they went and, you know, kind of became a third party. Because, I mean, on the one hand, like, definitely a lot of their stuff would sell. On the other hand, I do wonder if some of it, people wouldn't want it as badly if they could get it. Does that make sense?
So you're saying Nintendo's playing hard to get? I'm just trying to suss out what that is. Like, because it is no longer scarce, people will no longer covet it. Because, like, if, you know, I can say as a person who is a nominal Nintendo fan, like, if they put out Pokemon on iOS, that would be a thing that I got. You know, so yeah. so like I don't know particularly that that holds, just because like for right now, so until people who were born between, let's say, 1975 and 1995 are all dead, Nintendo has an audience of people who will care about a new Zelda or a new Mario game, right? They're like, it's going to be built in, and you know, more people are becoming fans of it through good Mario games, you know, every day. So I think that there is like cachet around that, like if they took it somewhere else. But I don't know that Nintendo would want to give up that much control, and I don't know that they could support you know, the development teams that they have if they went software only, right?
Sure. I guess more what I'm saying, not that I think it would definitely be successful. I'm just saying I'm not sure it would be as successful as people think.
Hmm. I don't know. We've talked about this for a long time. Let's see here. Dennis, what's your story?
So I'm actually going to request to go last. You said we didn't do anything special for our 50th, but I've got something special. So I'm gonna wait till the end.
Okay, cool, Ben. It's been a while since you talked. I'm gonna make you go.
All right. Yeah, I have two articles that are that I will share, but one story. So I didn't know this until today, but Last of Us has DLC coming out on the 14th, Valentine's Day. This was news to me. I don't know how long that's been announced.
Is this the story one or the multiplayer one?
It's story one.
This is the story, yeah. So it takes place before the events of the first game, and it's just kind of a one-off with the girl. Oh my gosh, what is the girl's name?
Emily. Ellie, yeah. E-name.
Yeah. So it's with Ellie when she's a kid, and apparently it takes place in like a boarding school type setting, and kind of learning how to survive in the world type thing. This is what the education of the boarding school is. So yeah, no, that's super exciting for me. I didn't know that that was a thing. I didn't know there would be more Last of Us.
Yeah.
They said it was the Last of Us. I didn't, you know. But one of the articles that I read also speculated, too, that a sequel might be in the works for 2015.
Oh, cool.
Which would be awesome.
Yeah, probably. Did they allude to what console that would be on?
PS4.
Okay.
And, I would almost wonder. Are they continuing with what's his name in Clementine?
Yeah, pretty much.
You would almost want to what, Ben?
I think I was gonna say another thing that's in the works too is they're gonna port the Last of Us to the PS4 in July.
Oh, so, okay. So
the
like
original game
again. Like what we're seeing is this weird reverse dilation of release to HD remix, right? Or HD edition. You know, we saw it with Tomb Raider. We see it with this. Like eventually, it's going to be day and date. Here is the regular edition, and here is the 4K edition. Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
But
I suppose that's probably good. We've discussed that into the ground.
We've discussed HD remakes or The Last of Us?
Yes. Or yes. Both. HD.
Both.
I was just going to say, I suppose that could be actually good for the new console generation, simply because they tend to be a little cheaper. Mm-hmm. So it kind of, you know, gives people a bit of, you know, allows people to start building their library.
Yeah, and again, we talked about it with the Tomb Raider thing. You have this bumper crop of already made content that people can that companies can adapt and get their chops up on programming this new system. Yeah, I don't know. I'm excited about the story DLC. You said that's coming out on Valentine's Day.
Valentine's Day, $15 on the PlayStation Network.
Ah, neat. Yeah, and I'm happy that it's going that like that. That's going to be it. Like they've said that is the only one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Cool.
Quality over quantity.
Yeah. For real. Let's
knock on wood.
Yeah, it could be shit. Don't worry. That's always a possibility. David, what's your story?
Sure. I just have something real minor. Apparently, a new game called Duke Nukem Mass Destruction has been announced. With the main story, story behind this being that it's going to be a top-down action RPG.
I didn't hear action RPG. Whoa. I heard like top-down shooter.
Oh, the article I'm reading is saying action RPG.
Huh.
Interesting. Why not both?
Go on.
It could be so it's a misogynist Zelda.
Yes.
It's The Legend of Duke, A Link to the Ass. There we go. All right. I feel filthy. I hate the person I am. But I saw this too. Like, they really want to keep that thing going, don't they? Who's the developer on that, David?
Let's see here. It's Interceptor Entertainment and 3D Realms.
Oh yeah, 3D Realms. So I guess I went back to them from Gearbox. I thought 3D Realms was dissolved.
What is 3D Realms made? I know I recognize the name.
They were like the big force in the 90s. So I don't know. Before they started working on Duke Nukem Forever, and stopped working on literally everything else. Yeah. So 3D Realms kind of sprung up from Apogee, which in turn was part of id Software for a little bit, or at least associated with it. So Apogee was, I believe, part of the like, they were the publisher for the Wolfenstein games. Wolfenstein. Yeah, you always get on me for it. I said Wolfenstein as a kid. Sorry. So background.
Frankenstein.
I can never say Wolfenstein correctly, because when I was a little kid, we said Wolfenstein, and like, you cannot override.
that's deep imprinted.
Yeah, yeah.
It's German, dude. They have rules.
Yeah. So 3D Realms was like the Duke Nukem studio by looking at this. So they did Duke Nukem 1 and 2, Rise of the Triad, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, that's probably what I saw it as. I think, didn't they just remake Rise of the Triad?
Yeah, there was like a modern, like a modern follow-up to it that just came out like on GOG that a lot of people really liked. So
yeah, I feel like Duke Nukem, I'm not sure how relevant it really is anymore.
No, I think that it's just a thing that they think people care about still, like Sonic.
Yeah, it a little bit, like, if you look at the, you know, if you kind of do the pitch for Duke Nukem, everything it is basically what, like you said, like vaguely misogynistic and just over the top action. So,
well, the movies that it's making fun of, like, they haven't been made for 30 to 40 years,
right?
So, yeah. So like his milieu, like was movies made between 1979 and like 1987. So,
honestly, Duke Nukem should have died with Matt Hazard, or when Matt Hazard came on the block.
I don't know. I think even that was. I think even that was too late. Like, that was making so everybody involved is making fun of things that have not been relevant for decades.
Yeah, fair.
So.
Right. I guess what I'm saying though is, I feel like if you're looking at, you know, its thing is now going to be just like even over the top, you know, action. I mean, you now have Saints Row, Call of Duty. I mean, I feel like that's no longer an interesting thing. I don't know. No. Its niche is gone. It's been de-niched.
Yeah, yeah. Unniched. Had a nichectomy. Yeah, I don't know. That's a bummer. I'm sad that exists. The more I think about it. Bleh.
On the other hand, if it is an action RPG, it becomes the next League of Legends, that would entertain me.
That would be a curveball.
I can't even... Then Dennis, round us out.
All right. So, like I said, this is something special for episode 50. I've been doing my research, and I don't think this is broken on any news websites yet. So this is new to the world. You know, special edition level breaking news. So, exactly
those noises. Go.
Yeah. I am going to be a dad.
Holy shit! Oh, awesome. My God, Dennis, congratulations.
Congratulations,
holy,
man.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Dude, I want to give you a high five. Holy shit, wow.
High five to the internet.
I'm not shocked. That's what people do, but wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Congratulations, man. That's awesome.
Oh.
Didn't Jen say she wanted her first kid when she was 26?
We had been telling people 28, but that was mostly just to keep people off our backs. So
I am so happy for you two. That is amazing. Wow.
Yeah. So Jen's like 10 to 11 weeks in, cool. Or excuse me, 11 to 12 weeks in.
Yeah.
Which means the baby is due August 21st.
Great.
So that's super exciting.
Yeah. Oh.
And so we, you know, we figured out we're going to do some sort of like, you know, fun pictures with Mario Kart and stuff like that. So there will be more stuff, but
yeah,
I'll totally be dressing the kid up in video game cosplays and everything like that.
Yeah.
It's too early to know the gender, so we're referring to this thing as Alpaca Llama Furia.
Okay, cool. Because you can never tell the difference.
Yeah. So that's until we find out, that's the name.
Yeah.
It's been a little bit rough sailing for Jen, but she is. She's feeling well. She's kind of coming out of the period for morning sickness.
Yeah, yeah. No, pregnancy sucks. I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. But
no, like, yeah, I try to support her any way I can, but sometimes like, there's not much she can do.
Yeah, yeah. No, the end product's pretty cool, but boy, that process.
Yeah.
Cool on pregnancy.
Yeah.
She's about as qualified to talk about it as I am.
No. I've read textbooks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, the holidays were interesting because everyone drinks all the time, so that was fun.
And were you doing the thing where you kind of like hold back and wait during that before telling
exactly.
people?
Yeah. So we're kind of going loud telling everyone on Wednesday.
Okay.
For kind of just our main circle of friends.
Yeah.
We told our parents about a week ago. Mm-hmm. And then she's told a couple of close friends. I've told a couple of close friends. Well, I've told you guys.
Yes.
You guys are my close friends.
Yeah.
And like one other couple outside of that who's kind of our mentors. So it's really, really exciting.
Yeah. Congratulations, man.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a level exclusive news story. About as close to breaking news as we're going to be able to get.
Dude, like, yeah, no, you were for real. Like for the 50th, like this isn't something that you talked about off mic either. Like it wasn't bring bring on Skype. Dude, you have no idea. Like that reaction was genuinely my reaction to hearing awesome news from a friend.
Yeah,
so.
I thought that would be fun to capture. I thought I would also get a big reaction out of the whole iced tea thing, but you know that, yeah, that everyone seems to know that already. So
yeah, apparently iced tea has a podcast with a very similar name to us. And yes, I'm talking about the rapper / sex murder crime guy.
Wait, what?
Investigator. He plays one on television.
I feel like when you describe someone as a sex murder crime guy,
they're the ones committing it.
Yeah. Yeah. You need to specify.
Yeah, okay, sorry. I was inelegant. I'm sorry. I'm just,
no, you're fine. You're fine. It's interesting. So Jen obviously has not been feeling well, so she spent a lot of time on the couch, which means we've spent a lot of time playing co-op video games.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Which has been this nice little bonding thing of, you know, playing Rayman, kind of forced to out of the situation.
Oh, forced to, quote unquote.
Oh, yeah, yeah, exactly. You were forced to play.
Yeah, twist my arm, why don't you?
But that's also born, we've started, or I've watched some of Futurama, but we've started watching Futurama through. And
oh, yeah.
Nice. Stuff, so lots and lots of stuff. We started the first one. She hasn't really seen any of them. So.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
So it's good times.
You're in for a treat up until about like, the Comedy Central run where it gets real, real bad.
I've
seen
the first Comedy Central season was pretty good, but the second one, it was more like, just, like very much one note. Like, okay, it was like mid to late era Simpsons where, well, this character hasn't had an episode yet. They had an episode about clamps, Ben. Come on.
I would argue that Futurama gets better and better as you go on.
Ooh. Yeah.
I liked the series finale, but I would say I would agree with you up until they were canceled and brought back. I even like the movies, you know, the movies in the first Comedy Central season, but the last two, it was kind of a march.
Yeah.
All right. We'll discuss this off podcast.
I think my favorite was the first one, the one right before they are canceled the first time.
You're going to have to give us some plot details.
Idle Hands or Devil Playthings?
That
season in terms of, like, has almost all of my favorites.
Yeah, yeah. No, I just did a rewatch of it as well, so it's very fresh in my memory. That's why my opinion was so strong.
It's not clouded by nostalgia.
Yeah,
well, it probably still is a little bit, but
a little bit, yeah. Like, yeah,
so, yeah. The other thing was, I think I mentioned it was off air to you guys a couple weeks ago. It was like, oh hey, I'm working on like a super secret project thing or whatever. Couldn't tell you. So I've actually been kind of writing down some stuff as you know, as we've gone through all this, and so I'm gonna kind of start a blog about my experience, and it's mostly because I'm an exhibitionist and I'll be better about blogging than journaling.
Yeah.
You know, we can figure out if it fits to put on Duckfeed or if it's just something that I can talk about, promote on the show. But I'll be doing a bit of a blog.
Yeah, no,
called called The Dadning. The Dadning. taken from that article a couple years back.
Yeah. For real. Yeah, definitely. Wow. I don't know. I'm awash with emotions, Dennis.
Yeah, me too. It's a pretty exciting time.
Yeah. Well, fantastic. And I'm sure that the fans, you know, are happy to hear that as well. Wow, man, this changes everything.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see how things change once the baby actually shows up.
Oh yeah.
Obviously, this is an awesome thing. I've told you guys before. It's one of the highlights of my week, and I'll maintain it as well as I can.
Don't pull a lonely sandwich on us, dude.
Oh no! I actually thought about that podcast when I was thinking about how to tell you guys. So
what?
You look nice today. So Adam Lissagore, he was the guy who was the driving force behind that podcast. At least in terms of editing and production, like that podcast is as good as it is because of his attention to detail. He had a kid, and they were spotty on their schedule before that happened. But he had a kid, and it's kind of like, yeah, and we're kind of going to call this off. So one of the best podcasts ever, cut down in its prime, just because a dude had to go and have a kid and shit. So
yeah. We'll see. Yeah. Hopefully this kid will be a content generation tool, and I can
can monetize him.
How can I monetize my child? Yeah. Ooh, I feel slinky just saying that. Oh, anyway, yeah. So really exciting news. It was, you know, happy to include you guys in that, and you guys listening when you get to hear this. So it's a super exciting time for us.
So I want to say, anybody who's listening, go to the Facebook page and comment on the episode. On the episode post, and maybe even on the episode itself, duckfeed.tv/level/lvl/50, and send Dennis your best wishes and Jen. Dennis and Jen,
and you can make name suggestions.
Okay, so the name suggestion that gets the most thumbs up wins.
Exactly. No, this is a funny bit of trivia. We had about 5 years ago negotiated names.
Okay. So that's not surprising at all.
If it's a boy, I have a name picked out, and if it's a girl, Jen has.
I think I know what the name is, actually. So.
Oh, we haven't exactly kept it a secret.
Nope.
I don't think we actively tell people, so I'll keep it a secret here in case. No, but I've mentioned it to friends before and everything. And then Jen has a name picked out if it's a girl. So we shall see.
Yeah.
It's on.
It's a coin flip, right? Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
So I know nothing of the infants. At what point do you know if it's a chick or a dude?
It'll probably be right? Yeah, we have our first ultrasound coming up at the end of this week, but that's too early, and so our second ultrasound I think is like 4 weeks after that, and that's when you get it. So
okay.
At least theoretically.
Yeah. Well,
we've heard the heartbeat and everything, so that's really cool.
Awesome.
Yeah.
God, there's nothing better than a healthy baby. Mm-hmm. I mean, if they're not healthy, you still love them. But
obviously,
oh man, that's pretty great. All right, mm-hmm. So you're going to find out?
Yeah, definitely. Okay, definitely. Cool.
Some people are. There's a really funny story. Sorry to make this parenting chat, I guess.
So
my brother, when he and his lady friend had their my niece Emma, they found out, hey, it's going to be a girl. And one of his coworkers at the time had recently had a kid, and the coworker didn't want to find out. It was him and the wife, and they were positive it was going to be a girl. Like, we don't need a doctor to tell us; we just know, right?
Huh. That's not how that works.
I know, right? So some people claim. I don't know. I don't want to impose my science on a woman's body. That is not something I want to do. However, they were so sure of this that they bought just all of the clothes and toys.
Oh no.
And they kind of like, oh, we decked out the room and we had this. And when that baby was squeezed out and he had a little Peter on him, they were heartbroken, and what that led to was a parking lot exchange at the workplace of Chris getting basically the entire wardrobe for the first 6 months.
Oh, wow,
for
nice.
Like a really cut rate. Like, he didn't need clothes forever because of his stupid coworker.
That's funny.
Yeah. Like, if you want to not find out and just get your kid yellow and green stuff, that's awesome because yellow and green are good colors. I don't agree with the whole, like, oh, let's assign him a role and give him blue because he's a boy. Like, I don't like that so much. But but to bet on it, essentially.
Yeah, that's a pretty bold move. No, yeah. our rationale is because we know a lot of people who are doing like, oh, we don't want to find out, mm-hmm. and it's like, because there are so few surprises left in the world, we want this to be a surprise, mm-hmm. and the rationale is, well, you know, that's great. It'll be a surprise no matter when it happens, and we'd prefer it to happen, you know, on our terms when we're feeling good and we can have friends around, uh-huh. versus like after the most painful 4 hours of your life and you're exhausted, yeah. and you've been up for 26 hours. So, so that's the rationale.
Yeah.
See,
yeah.
I feel like if there's not enough surprises in the world, I can just like randomly tase you.
Yeah. Yeah. You get the shinna snack up on you, you know, but, wow, that's a,
So news,
big news,
very cool. Well,
yeah,
happy
yeah.
episode 50.
Happy episode.
That, I didn't even realize that until like yesterday, and I'm like, holy shit, this is perfect.
the last episode of the show ever. So no, I'm not. Don't. Oh, that is awesome. I couldn't be happier.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Great. Cool. Well, it feels a little silly to go and talk about games after this, but why don't we do that?
Oh hell yeah.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the video games that we have been playing over the past week. Again, it just feels so goofy. Sorry, I'm. yeah. Does anybody want to volunteer to go first?
Mine's super irrelevant.
Oh, super irrelevant or relevant?
Yeah.
Okay.
Irrelevant.
Okay, irrelevant.
It's just XCOM again. I still haven't beaten the damn thing.
Really? So you're still plugging away then?
Well, yeah, not like, you know, all day and night or anything, but yeah, I mean, I played over the weekend. It's like the last boss fight is within grasp. I can see where the boss fight is. Mm-hmm. I have the thing that I need to activate in order to trigger the boss fight, but I don't have a soldier that can activate the thing yet. Mm. So I'm trying to be as...
Are there like grindy missions you can do to get them up to speed?
You essentially have to wait it out. So, I mean, you have to – I mean, you can fortify your base however you want, but you just have to wait until a mission's triggered, and then you try and get their experience up when you do that. So that's kind of the best I can do right now. So it's so it's this kind of a special kind of experience that you need to get, or a special type of skill.
Yeah.
And so I've been doing that, and I have a couple soldiers who've gone through the tree. But I assume that they still needed like more experience before they get it. So I'm just kind of trying to wait it out. I mean, the nice thing is money's not an issue now in XCOM. So it's
really,
you know, like, yeah. There, I mean, you know, I'm yeah. It's set. You know, it's not like I'm not on my heels at all anymore. So I will say, you know, it's because I saved the game. I have the option to save the game, so that's partially why. But yeah. So. It will be complete soon, but not yet. So
yeah. That's kind of like,
interesting. Go ahead.
I'll say this just because it is ignorant of the game. It seems weird to me that they would put this wall in front of you would you have made those decisions to get to that kind of experience naturally? Or is it just a matter of you kind of took it in a weird direction?
Well, I mean, you know, the game's always trying to push you in some direction. And I'm not saying this like it's a bad thing. It's just kind of the format of the game where it's like, you know, like first you need to interrogate an alien and then you need to do this. It's kind of pulling you through the story, which is, you know, like how they can defend Earth or how they can, you know, get the upper hand against aliens. And so that's kind of what each mission is. And so, I mean, this kind of falls in line with that, where they're forcing you to do something so that you can attack the aliens or, you know, get the upper hand. So I just see it as an extension of that. I'm not bothered by it, but maybe I am a little bit bothered. I just want to beat the game, I guess. So I'm just kind of waiting it out right now. But I mech'd another one of my people, so I dismembered one of my troops and gave them a mech suit. So that's about it. There's no reason to talk in length about this because I've talked about this for the past X number of weeks.
Yeah.
Just your run of the mill dismemberment.
X number of weeks. Yeah.
It's funny you talk about. So yeah, you kind of are your objectives throughout the game are kind of moving through the tech tree. And you talked about kind of grinding, and it kind of screwed me the second time I played because I knew what I needed to get, and therefore I optimized my upgrade choices to get to them as fast as possible. Mm-hmm. But because there wasn't that natural kind of wandering through the upgrade tree, I didn't, you know, get enough experience and extra materials since I was advancing so fast, and very quickly got to the point where I was way out of my depth. And just did not have soldiers that were powerful enough, did not have the right equipment for the soldiers, even though I had advanced to the point in the game where things were getting really difficult. So it's okay. It's useful for you to kind of say, oh, I'm going to wait until I've powered up my guy a little bit. You know, that's to your advantage.
Hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. Huh. That sure sounds like XCOM talk to me.
I can go next.
Okay, go.
Yeah, so I've been playing a lot more of Spelunky, and I got into the daily challenges, like you had mentioned last week, Cole, and those things are freaking addicting. Like, they are a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And it's no different than the normal game. Obviously you can't start over. Like, you get one shot at it and that's it, and everyone gets the same level layout. But you're judged solely on score, or on money. So, you know, whenever you die, it takes how much money you have, and that's where you rank in the leaderboard, which is different, I think, than the main game, which takes into account time. So it's like how fast you can beat it. So it's a very different way of playing, where you kind of, maybe ignore shops, and don't purchase resources that you might really need. Because you're trying to save money. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, a $20,000 jetpack might be really, really useful, but, you know, that's $20,000 that won't count towards your score. And so, do you think you can tough it out and make do without?
Yeah.
And get that extra points. And especially for me, who, you know, dies in like the first two levels each time, that extra bit of cash helps.
Have you ritualized your play yet?
In terms of how I approach each situation?
I mean, more like just like when you choose to play. So I have a lot of people on my Steam friends list who I will, you know, just because my personal computer is my work computer. You know, Steam is generally open and I get the little alerts when people start playing stuff. And I see, you know, so-and-so is playing Spelunky. It's like, oh, they're doing their daily challenge. And where they live, it is roughly 8 o'clock. So I know that they do their daily challenge right when they wake up, Zach. Have you made it part of your daily routine, like alongside your coffee or, you know, God, you know, I'm not even going to say that. I'm not going to joke about you taking your Vita into the bathroom because I know you're a goddamn human being, not a monster.
That I have it. My smartphone, I do. So I'm a half human being, I guess. It's usually for me when I go to bed, since that's when I'm mostly playing the Vita anyway. But it still varies. It's not completely a part of the routine.
Yeah.
It is. I have the music stuck in my head. I'm seeing that it's like Tetris Syndrome only with Spelunky. Yep. So that's fun.
I have a video that's going through the pipeline. It should be live pretty soon. But that was Spelunky inspired, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice.
I'll share it. I'll probably put it up just as I do on Twitter whenever I voice a video at the place that I produce or that I produce videos for. Creative lead videos for. I generally put them up on Twitter. But yeah, it is Spelunky themed.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Very cool.
Nice.
And then the other game I've been playing is I got it for my birthday, even though my birthday is tomorrow. I got Tearaway, which is the kind of Vita killer app, as much as there can be one.
Yeah. This is the Media Molecule. Guys, right?
Yeah. So from the Little Big Planet guys, and it has all of the charm and wit and just adorableness of Little Big Planet in a 3D old school style platformer, which is a lot of fun. The big thing they do, I guess there's two big things. One, the entire world is made out of paper, and a large part of the game's collectibles actually give you schematics for how to make them in real life.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
And so you can like origami all these little characters from the game, and it gives you how to do that.
Yeah.
Which is really, really cool. And so all of your all of your abilities and powers and stuff are based around being paper. The other cool thing is that it makes use of all of the Vita's touch and video and microphone capabilities with the guise that you, the player, are actually an entity interacting with the game. Mm-hmm. And so there's like a sun in the sky that is your portal to look down in the game. And if you look at the right time in the right place, it always shows you your face real time in the sun, like looking down, which is super cute.
Showing your horrible loading game, like a DS angle face.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, here is you at the most unflattering angle possible.
Yeah, exactly.
Basically, you are the sun god of the paper universe.
Yeah, basically.
You're like the baby from Teletubbies.
Oh God, I hadn't thought about that for a while. Nightmares are going to come back.
I thought I'd
now.
Buried it.
Oh man,
Teletubbies.
Here I come to pierce the veil once more.
Mm-hmm. But they also have the ground is made out of paper, and in certain thin sections of paper, you use the rear touch screen, and it actually shows your finger poking up through the paper. And you can use that to move stuff around, or it's like, it's a great way to attack enemies. Is like they're standing there and this giant finger just pokes up through the screen and knocks them over. So it's really, really, creative that way. The collectibles are all in present boxes, and when you get the present, you actually pull the strings on the present to open it. Lots of just nice little touches like that. You move platforms by touching them. It says that there is sections that can use sound. I haven't gotten to them yet. But it's got all the charm of Media Molecule, and it seems to have a really good grasp on what makes the Vita special and so much fun.
Yeah, that is that is the thing that sounds most appealing about it to me, is that it is one with the machine, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, man, I always think I would like a Vita. I almost asked for one for Christmas. it's for my parents because they insist on buying me stuff and blah. I would say that, and then that would be it. But I just realized the last thing that I need in my life is more games.
more games to own and not actually play.
Yeah. I'm getting better though, so don't worry.
Oh yeah, how's that backlog looking? Really?
I'm at the very least not accumulating as much as I once was. So. Sorry, I didn't mean to take that away. So Tearaway, good thumbs up.
Yeah,
as a person who likes Media Molecule's flavor.
Yeah, it gives you like a percentage complete, and after just a couple hours of play, I'm already like 15%, or not a couple hours of play, maybe an hour of play, and then some. I'm 15% through. So it feels at least like I'm progressing through the game pretty quick. Mm-hmm. Now that doesn't account for like a difficulty curve, and I'm sure levels get bigger and more complicated. So that might not be accurate, but at least my initial reaction on seeing it was, this seems like it's going to be short. But, you know, we've discussed in the past how that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I feel like that is a good game based on what you've said. I don't know why I started that sentence, but I had to finish it. So
that's like 90% of this podcast. Is it's just, here we go.
I'm you started it. It you this, will this, finish this, it. This,
oh, no, I started talking again.
that is. Yeah. Cool. Anything else?
No, that's it.
Cool. Well, I'm excited to hear more just because that is a curiosity to me. I've longingly watched videos of it. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just don't know if I could see my loading face, man. that would be a deal breaker.
Oh, that's me.
that is me. I'm going to do mine just because it is relatively short, but it is new. Came out just this week. So over the course of yesterday and today, I played Octodad, The Dadliest Catch.
Nice.
I love that title.
I kind of hate it.
Oh, no.
The game or the title?
The title. I like the game.
Oh, okay. Oh, we had totally different reactions. Okay, I'm glad you like the game and not the title.
Yeah. So I have like this weird relationship with Octodad, just because I filed it under the Oculus Rift, along with things that like I see headlines about all the time. It seemed like for a while there, every day I saw an article about Octodad on Joystick.
Oh, it's Polygon. A media darling.
Yeah. Just kind of like, and you know, something being a darling is fine. Like plenty of games that we talk about are darlings, right? Like how many articles did you see about, you know, Gone Home, for instance. Mm-hmm, right. Mm-hmm. Like it's so some things are gonna be darling. I don't hold that against it. It just seemed like there was a lot of marketing behind it, and I never got a good explanation of what the game was, aside from here's this orange octopus and haha lol random. And so like I filed it away until I actually saw the Polygon review, which compared it to the Chicken Boo sketches from Animaniacs.
Yes.
And so I was like, okay. That's pretty cool because I liked those little segments on Animaniacs, as you do, because Animaniacs is great. I'll just go with that. And I bought it because it was 20% off. I knew I was going to get it sometime anyway. I knew it was short. Let's just go for it. It's real cool. Like, it's one joke, and it leans into that whole joke the entire game. Fortunately, the entire game is only 2.5 hours long, which may dissuade you from buying it for the full $15. That's not a discussion I want to have. I felt fine having done it just because it is a small developer, blah, blah, blah. You vote with your dollars. I would like to see more of this kind of stuff, et cetera, et cetera. You're contributing to a larger body of work by supporting it. Mm-hmm. But the joke is you're playing as an octopus, this gigantic octopus that is walking around in a suit, pretending to be a dude that is a loving husband and father, and nobody is the wiser. Okay. So,
because honestly, who hasn't made that mistake?
Yeah. So like it starts out like with this lady waiting at the altar on her wedding day. It's kind of like, oh gosh, where is he? And somebody goes to check on the groomsman's dressing room, and it opens up, and he sees this octopus, like half in disguise, half not, obviously an octopus. And he goes, "You're not dressed. You need to get ready." And so, like you know, again, very obviously a chicken, very obviously an octopus, and that plays into the gameplay because you're doing these incredibly awkward controls in order to try and manipulate things or navigate these environments without drawing attention to yourself.
And what are you playing it on?
PC.
With a keyboard or with a, like an Xbox 360
so
controller?
Initially, I played it with the mouse. So it's a mouse game, but you operate it with a mouse and keyboard if you want to. I quickly, after my first session, switched over to the 360 controller. I switched over to it because it felt like it was, you know, just a better experience, but I don't know if it being a good experience was the intended result, because the awkwardness of the controls is part of the comedy, as you it's, are yeah. like gesticulating around as this super gooey, you know, like elastic Octopus Man through like supermarkets and museums and stuff. Like, yeah. Like the awkwardness lends itself to the story and kind of the humor of like, why is nobody paying attention except when I knock stuff over? Because he's obviously this horrible monstrosity.
Yeah.
Isn't it like Amnesia Controls?
No.
Oh, I thought, okay.
No. I played a demo of it when I was last at a GameStop, which why I don't know, but and that was going to be my kind of main area of concern, is that the controls are definitely awkward, but it's intentional and it adds to the fun. But it's kind of the awkwardness is designed for a controller, so it's not to say that a controller has better controls, because that's not the point. It just that fits more with what the game is trying to do.
Yeah. So like the two sticks, I guess it's not even that, the two triggers activating. So the way that it works is you press a button to lift your left leg and you press a button to lift your right leg, and you have a stick that that kind of like moves you in that direction. So if you're holding down the right mouse button, he picks up his right quote-unquote leg. It's actually a bunch of legs. And then you move the mouse to stretch it further, and then you release it to drop, and then it suckers onto whatever's there. You pick up the left leg, and then you get like this rhythm going. It's a little awkward. It's better on a stick just because you can hold the direction and then alternate the button presses. Like, the faster you go, the shorter the steps are. If you take longer steps, it's more goofy and you have you cover more distance, but you have more of a chance of losing control and knocking stuff over. But yeah, like it puts you in these preposterous situations because of that, or to kind of test that. Like, this is a world that is covered in banana peels, and they call attention to it. Like, it's very self-aware. But
what is the win or lose or whatever condition?
It's not getting enough stuff over or being spotted by people who would out you as an octopus. Also, there are boss battles because there is a sushi chef who is chasing you down.
Nice.
And the story bears that out. But
seems legit.
Yeah. No, but so it is one joke. It does not wear its welcome out, which is super good. So I'm not entirely on board with the idea that, like, let's make this experience as awkward as possible as like a sustainable thing. Like, I recognize that it's part of the joke in a very much like, I would totally not blame somebody for being turned off of it because this is impossible to control, even for as goofy as it looks. You eventually get onto it, but the challenges it throws at you, they kind of outstrip your ability to adapt to it, or at least they outstripped my ability to adapt to it. So there was a lot of deaths involved in it. But yeah.
And that's kind of the idea, is that's part of the fun, is like, random stuff happens and you get in awkward positions and it just,
yeah.
Yeah. That's goofy, which is funny as a novelty at first. And then you're like, okay, well, I actually want to progress here. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Nice. But,
so I think one of my favorite details is, his wife and children talk to him. Right. And he's just this octopus who's in a suit, and he can't speak English, and he only speaks in like blurbles, right? And so it's closed captioned. I think that the captions are on by default, which is good, because whenever he talks, it doesn't translate it. It just has in asterisk kind of, I think, the direction that they gave to the voice actor who played Octodad. So it was like burbles in a way to deflect the question, or is evasive, or burbles evasively, or burbles a possibly off-color joke. And people respond to him as if he had said a thing. And it gets even crazier. Like, there's one that was like, burbles in such a way as to indicate that he's putting his game face on. So that was the majority of the comedy for me, which is reading these things, which are a scriptwriter's direction to a voice actor who is not speaking intelligible English.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But it's pretty good. I'm very happy that I played it. It's not going to be to everybody's taste. I don't even know if it's gonna still be on sale by the time you listen to this. But so the reason I don't like the title is, just because it is a really bad pun, which, we trade in those. That's fine. But it reminds me of the James Pond games, actually. And I remember selling those.
I don't remember those.
So I was aware of them because of their Game Boy Advance ports. And it's like, huh, that's weird. So they were platformers that were popular on Sega consoles in Europe. And so you're playing as a little fish, but they just have the worst titles that are mostly spoofs of James Bond movies. So like there's one of them, License to Bubble, A View to a Spill, Leak and Let Die, from 3 Mile Island with Love. Like it's all pretty bad. Robocod.
That's kind of funny, actually.
That's not even James Bond.
Yeah, I know, right? So yeah, just like for some reason, I can appreciate a good bad pun. It just seemed kind of pandery. I'm not even sure. Yeah. But I kind of wish they didn't feel like Octodad is a perfectly good title. Deadliest Catch doesn't speak to me in a way that I think that they hoped it would.
I think it's one of those things where someone said it at a conference table and everyone giggled and they're like, do it.
Let's do it. Yeah.
And then just didn't think about it again.
I don't know. I still like Deadliest Catch.
I like it too. But I'm a sucker for puns.
That's true. I'm willing to be outvoted on this too. Like, I'm not like, it's terrible and everybody likes it. It's terrible. It's kind of, I saw it and it's like, I don't know. it was a blemish on a product that I otherwise feel is pretty good, and ultimately it is not a substantial blemish. Like, I would just say, yeah, just call it Octodad. You don't have to acknowledge the shitty title.
I feel like actually the worst thing I would say the title implies is that there's going to be sequels, and from what you're saying, it sounds like it's a game that probably can't support a sequel.
So what I'd be interested in to see, like, more of this, like, wouldn't be more of the story, because it is pretty contained. Like, there is a story that it tells through it, and it's a pretty good story, like, in terms of it's as good as a story that is based on a single joke could be, right? but what I would like to see actually is challenge maps. Like, it has Steam Workshop functionality built into it, which means there are actually like fan made maps and user generated levels out there. But like, you know, to basically do like a ROM hack of this and like give me something really tough to try a couple times and then fail at and then, you know, walk away from.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's then like watch Let's Play of.
Yeah.
It's like Journey syndrome. I remember getting to the end of Journey and thinking that was an amazing experience. It would be great if they actually had some levels that were challenging.
It's not even that. Like the levels are plenty challenging. It's that is what I would like to see more of, because I don't know that they could write another story around that joke that was as funny as this was.
They should do an Octodad parody of Heavy Rain.
Okay, so what I'm thinking of is an Octodad parody of Heavy Rain, except the levels are they would require such a mastery that it's essentially you doing parkour with the most awkward controls possible. So like, I want to watch somebody who is really good at this do like a YouTube speed run that is just like mind-blowing.
Oh, I'm sure that'll exist in a little bit. That'll be really cool.
But so yeah, I heard about nothing but Octodad on these sites that I read for 8 months, and then I played the game. And said, oh, it's pretty good. Yeah,
sweet.
Yeah, David, round us out.
Sure. I actually have not been playing much at all. I've been pretty busy, so mine's kind of just going to be a couple of short hits. Been playing a little bit more Kingdom of Loathing. I finally earned up enough money to buy a Mr. A, which is basically their freemium currency, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So that's been like a goal for me for a couple years now, and mm-hmm. I just now learned that I can just wait till holidays and take advantage of people trying to buy up stuff to advance the holiday content. So
yeah,
I know.
Yeah. No, you're attaching yourself to a secondary revenue stream. Yeah.
Yes. Or
or profiteering. Profiteering.
Yes. As I was about to say, more profiteering. So that's the thing. It's kind of funny. It's one of those things where, like, now I've earned this. It's like, now what am I actually going to do with this?
I was about to ask that.
Yeah. Like, what?
I know. I mean, basically, the way it works is the kind of their model for how they make money is for every $10 you donate, you get one of these accessories, mm-hmm. and then once a month they put out a item that you can only buy with one of the accessories, and usually it's something that's a little bit more powerful than a comparable piece of equipment, or unlocks exclusive content, or often it's some, you know, very specialized niche.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of how it works.
Right, right. So it just it gives you a little bit of an edge, or it gives you a content reward. And as we've said, right. More content is the best reward. So
right, and it tends to not. I mean, some of them will be slightly better in terms of just like, you know, this has the biggest strength bonus of any item in this slot, but they more often tend to be more specialized.
Mm-hmm.
And so they'll give you an advantage, but it won't a real advantage, but won't be necessarily real direct.
Right.
So, good stuff. The other thing I've been doing is I've actually gone back into Fallen London / Echo Bazaar.
Right. Right.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
I don't know how much there is to say about that. It's better every time I play it. And although it was always a game that was kind of hard to like keep track of all the different options you had, and so coming back after a year of not playing it, it's kind of been overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's I don't know, it continues to be probably the best written game I've ever played.
Hmm.
So.
Now this isn't the one that's like I'm trying to remember. I tried it, and this one is Twitter based, right?
Sort of. I mean, it's browser based, and you log in with your Twitter account, and then the social aspects of the game use Twitter kind of as their network glue.
Yeah. Yeah, and also the energy requirements are more stringent in Fallen London, so they really are like microtransactioning it a little bit more than comparable games. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. It's basically you can save up to 20 actions, and you get a new action every 10 minutes.
Okay.
So and. It's kind of its big thing is they kind of use a playing card analogy. So each playing card is one story. So it'll have, you know, some set up a situation, and then you'll have several options to how you respond.
Mm-hmm.
One of the big things though that makes it interesting is the options aren't always just like. It's not always choose your own adventure where it's literally like, what do I do? It can sometimes give you actual control over what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you know, it might be like, oh, you know, find a box that fell off a cart and open it up. And like one of the options might be like, it's full of puppies, or it's full of, you know, some Lovecraftian horror. So it's kind of as this weird thing where you're not just making decisions of what you do. You're also kind of dictating how the story plays out.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
But it's really well run. It's a lot of fun.
The one I was thinking of was Improbable Island.
That's also very good, but yes, a little different.
Not the same thing. Yep. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Okay. So the story is based on a deck of playing cards, like the Insane Clown Posse albums, the Joker's decks. That's what you're saying to me, right?
That is the most
apt to know. What just happened.
Yeah, no. I just dropped some ICP science on you. Whoop whoop.
It's like a miracle.
Oh man. Browser-based games. So I only assume that you are playing these in class?
Kind of a combination of my computer I actually take with me places is a Linux box and is very, very it's
limited.
It'd be 7 years old.
Okay.
So it can't really play modern games.
Okay.
So I'm doing browser stuff.
Yeah. Which makes sense, you know. You have Cookie Clicker on in the background, Kingdom of Loathing on a side tab, and then Fall in London over in a new window. Yeah.
Did you say Cookie Clicker?
Yeah.
Is that a thing?
Yeah, yeah. Cookie Clicker, Candy Box, Clicking Bad, you know, all those, you know.
Move Candy Click it, Saga.
Like a sex machine. Yeah. yeah. Anything else, David?
Nah, that's all I've got.
Cool. Well, that was a remarkably short What You've Been Playing. No, sorry, The Grind. Fell into old habits.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. There we go.
Negative 50 episode.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, so that wraps
multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you to participate with us in this crazy little experiment we call podcasting. Not padcasting, which is a typo. Just use your spell check, buddy. Okay. So
what is the pad cost of this?
What's that?
What is the pad cost of this?
Said the frog to the dealer.
At least five pads. This five is high pads. Quality.
Yeah, it's high quality pads. Oh yeah. So the question that we ask you, the listeners, is, what's your favorite game with a unique control scheme? You know, is there a game that you have played that has like a super weird way of interacting with it that either lended to the story or made for a super great experience for you? Right. So this was kind of inspired by the Dadliest Catch Octodad pun name kind of thing. Like I was playing, I was like, oh, that'd be pretty fun to hear other examples. So people came out and said things. Ben, what's Gary say?
Gary says, Brothers is my favorite intersection of control scheme and narrative. It's spoilery, though. So I assume did not continue.
Even thinking about the example that that brings to mind, like, makes me weepy. So I don't know. Like, it very much is powerful. But yeah, he's right.
About both things.
Yes, about both things. About control and also making Cole cry.
Always right.
Yeah, Brothers. Seriously, get on that Brothers step. I'm very sad that I waited as long as I did. So, yeah. Let's get here. David, what's Nick say?
Nick says, is it too obvious to say Wii Sports? Love or hate it, they definitely nailed the feeling of using a tennis racket like no other game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't deny it. I don't know that it's too obvious, but like that was a whole game that was the vanguard for a whole movement that was unique control schemes. So I think that is almost the example, right?
Well, I feel like the number of people who bought a Wii and then only played Wii Sports, I think really speaks to the fact that, yes, that is a very effective use of controls.
Yeah. So this is a weird thing. So my dad and, his family and my little sister, they have a Wii and they've got a bunch of games, but every Christmas there is a Wii bowling tournament that takes place when
nice.
I'm over there.
Oh, that's yeah.
awesome.
Like even so, it's super fun, you know. Like the ceiling's super low. We put Nick's in the ceiling as we get a little bit overzealous with our throws, right? But yeah, Wii Sports, like even still today, has an impact, right?
So where do you rank?
You know what? I'm not as good. They are really good because they play it much more often than I do. So yeah.
Are there any perfect games? Wii games, that is.
They have some that are approaching it. I believe that the highest number is like 289.
But then you throw out the blue shell.
Yeah. And you stop them because you hate success. Yeah. Yeah. No, Wii Sports is a super valid answer.
Yeah. How can you? Okay. Yeah, I guess you can get a 289. Sorry. I was trying to. Yeah. All right. Good.
Yeah. If it wasn't exactly 289, it would have been something very near that. So, yeah. Like, they just, yeah. I just killed all my credibility. But let's see here. Dennis, what's Christopher say?
He says, Resident Evil 4 on the Wii. I hate controllers for shooters of every kind. However, I really dug what they did with the Wii remote and that attachment thing, whatever that nonsense is called.
The nunchuck, my friend. It is stupid.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was like, was there a special Resident Evil 4 attachment? Like a chainsaw attachment?
Oh, wait, like, you joke, but...
It was an actual thing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
really?
it was huh. I believe the collector's edition of RE4 came with a chainsaw shaped GameCube controller, which was a total B to shelf, like a GameStop, and it stuck around for way too long. I probably should have bought it just to not have to deal with it anymore. But
see, I that is something I would like to own. I'm not sure I'd spend whatever they were asking for.
Oh, it was but so uncomfortable. David,
I wouldn't use it.
Yeah, you just have it. Yeah. No, Gary has Gary from Watch Out for Fireballs. He has a PS2 controller that is a slime from Dragon Age, or not Dragon Age, God, a slime from Dragon Quest Warrior Mon. it's the most uncomfortable thing to hold. It's like a nice piece of statue, but as an actual artifact to interact with the game, it's really, really uncomfortable. Which is exactly what that RE4 controller was. Speaking of RE4, Dennis, continue.
Yeah, sure. So the Wii Remote and the Nunchuck. My like of it is mostly helped out by the fact that you aim by pointing where you want to shoot, kind of like a mouse, instead of sliding sticks around and getting eaten before getting a shot off. Yep, I am that bad at regular controllers.
And after my own heart.
And one kind of cool thing about it, sometimes I'd get all shaky and nervous and miss easy shots, or just from natural gaming fatigue. That's really, really cool. Yeah. The results more accurately represent my obvious real life inability to take out hordes of foreign zombies and chainsaw ladies.
Did you have to put foreign in there? Sorry, no. Yeah. They are screaming Spanish at you.
This is true.
Mateo.
Aquí.
I think that, like, so to me, I know that there are more recent versions, so the HD versions on 360 and PS3 are a thing, and then there is the definitive HD ultra upscale remake that they did for PC, which I wouldn't mind having because a mouse makes sense, but I would rather play with a controller. But like the Wii version, like, I consider that to be the definitive one, right? Just because of that. Just because it is such a match, right? For the fine aiming that it asks you to do, and because they didn't add in the free run that 5 and 6 did, you know, actually letting you do strafing, and you know, it was tank controls.
Oh, gotcha.
You know, because it was basically like you planted and then raised your gun and aimed. Like it totally fit the control scheme. Totally fit the rhythm they are asking you to match.
It didn't make it too easy.
Nope. It's still hard. I mean, it's a difficult and kind of fatiguing game.
Yeah, yeah.
Regardless of how you interact with it, so because it is 10 hours too long. But
wait, what? Resident Evil 4?
Yeah. I say this, and every time you express surprise, you should know that I'm like half genuine, half just
baiting me.
Yeah, just trying to get a rise out of you.
You can beat it in a day.
I know you can, because it is literally 24 hours long.
You can beat it in exactly a day.
Yep.
That's funny.
Which is way too
while
long.
While watching 24.
Yeah. So just do a split screen on your Xbox 360. Or on your Xbox One, rather. Yeah. Huh. Yeah. That's pretty good. Yeah, I like that one. We have one through email as well. This is Alan via the contact forum. He says, when I was really young, I was at the arcade every day after school with a couple of my best friends. One of our favorite arcade cabinets was a game you might not have heard of. Street Fighter. Not Street Fighter 2 or Alpha or Super. Street Fighter 1. It had two oversized pneumatic buttons, one for punch and the other for kick. The idea was the harder you hit the button, the harder Ryu would kick or punch. The fighting the fighting was hard and terrible, but the interstitial minigames were great. Chopping wood planks, punching blocks of ice, and chopping the tops off of glass bottles was where all the fun was at. Push the button too hard, and Ryo would break his hand. Too soft, and you failed.
That's yeah. really cool. Awesome. I didn't know they did that.
Yeah, yeah. So everybody, you know, Street Fighter II is the canonical example of that kind of you know, of fighting games. But people forget that there is a Street Fighter One. My impression was that, like, I don't know where he gets pneumatic, but that they were like padded things that you punched.
That would make sense for a pneumatic, though.
Would it?
Yeah.
I mean, like pressure sensitive kind of things, or
yeah, yeah.
I'm looking at this, so I've never actually seen the most of these. Yeah, they're like big pads that you could like hit. Huh.
Very cool.
Yeah, I don't know, but yeah, that's definitely cool. People forget it. Like Street Fighter II came along and basically codified all arcade fighting game controls, and like there's been no innovation since. So the fact that they did this weird thing for their first one.
Which yeah. leads to my answer for the question.
Oh, shit. Yeah, good.
So I was trying to think of one, and I kind of have a couple different games. But Batman is one of them as far as revolutionizing fighting mechanics of just, like, stripping it down and just having an attack and defense buttons.
Oh, yeah.
And then having further complex controls on top of that. Mm-hmm. I thought that was kind of a revolutionary for its time, or at least I had not seen a game nail it before that, and I feel like a lot of games have copied it since.
Yeah.
And then other than that, I was going to say Shadow of the Colossus. I thought was had an interesting control scheme as far as like them choosing like the endurance circle and having that kind of translate to a lot of different things, and devoting a button to petting a horse or holding up a sword and shining the light. So I thought that there were interesting choices with that made it a really cohesive experience, a really nice experience.
Yeah. Specifically with petting the horse is kind of like back to the brothers discussion. Like, let's include a be human button.
Yeah.
You know, like just it adds nothing to the actual mechanical benefit, but like this is something that makes you feel good as a person, because you can never forget when you're playing these things, you are a human who is interacting with a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, good choice.
Yeah, definitely. Dennis, how about you?
So mine is more on the unique hardware route, and also hails from arcades. Light gun games.
Yes.
Specifically Time Crisis 3, which I actually bought the like home version of.
Oh yeah. That was actually really cool, because you plugged in, basically there was a pass through to the video channel on like a composite thing. So as opposed to just like the system sensing when you press the trigger and then flashing out the screen to put up a white square to see if the IR sensor was pointed at it. Like, it actually, like, sensed what, like, it cross-referenced the video signal with what you were aiming it at. So it was super, super accurate compared to most other light gun games.
That also keeps you from doing the reload cheat, like in House of the Dead.
Yeah, by putting your finger over the barrel.
Yeah.
I totally did not mean to interrupt you, but I totally did, Dennis.
No, it's in all reasons that I like it. But it's kind of similar to that Resident Evil 4 thing, where it feels good to actually be miming what you're doing instead of using thumbsticks.
Yeah.
And even though the game is on rails, like the feeling of just aiming around the screen and looking down the sights and, you know, pulling off shots was really, really natural and really fun. I specifically like the arcade versions that actually had the slide on them that would mimic a kickback.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was just really cool. And it had that physicality of when you were, you know, holding down and firing an entire magazine from your Uzi, like you actually had to force yourself to hold the gun down from the kickback.
Yeah.
And so that was just really, really cool.
Yeah. The thing that blew me away, like more than the force feedback, which was awesome, but like for Time Crisis specifically, was the foot pedal for going in and out of cover. Like, that was like just, because I was used to Virtua Cop and like Lethal Enforcers, and before that, actually having the ability to control the rhythm of when I was vulnerable and when I was not, like was so integral, and the foot pedal was a great way to do that.
The only downside to that is that now whenever I hear the word action, I get the overwhelming urge to shoot everyone I see.
Never work on a movie set.
Exactly. That's why you were kicked off of the set of the Avengers 2. Mark Ruffalo was bleeding out.
It's actually cool. So in the home version, that button, because you obviously can't ship a huge foot pedal.
Well, I mean, they did
on...
for Rock Band.
Or DDR.
Or also true. But they just put a button on the, well, there was a button on the side of the gun, and also one on the butt of the gun. Mm-hmm. So that, and I would actually like mime, you know, how like you pull the gun up next to your head and like, you know, have both hands on it. Like, so I would full on, when I went into cover, you know, mime that, and then, you know, put your hand down in that kind of A-frame stance when you went out to shoot to interact with the button. Mm-hmm. And so even like the foot pedal is definitely more natural, but with the button on the bottom of the gun, it kind of invited you to act it out a bit more.
Yeah. No, it encourages it. Like people make fun of like first time Wii players for basically flailing around like a total tool doofus. But having that light gun makes you do James Bond poses. Like every time I play House of the Dead, I do the gangster pose. Like I've got the gun sideways, right?
Sure, yeah. That's the only way to shoot zombies.
Yeah. No, like, and I'd have been doing that since like Lethal Enforcers with that gigantic blue revolver, right? Like, you hold the gun sideways because that is the way that the cool men in movies do it. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. No, for sure.
So that's what I'm calling it right now. DDR Time Crisis crossover.
No. Okay, so it's DDR, except it's just a dude who has a gun, and he points it at your feet, and he says, dance, and then he shoots, and then you have to do, like, the little sequence it puts in, otherwise you die. So this is a WarioWare minigame. Yeah. How about you, David? What up?
Well, first I'm going to be contrarian and say controls in a good game disappear. So, in my opinion, most of the time when games have unique controls, that's a sign of bad controls.
Really?
However, to completely go against that, I would say actually every Devil May Cry game except the most recent one. Truly, that's what I'd say. I'm not just being whatever about the most recent one. I think the big thing, there's the idea in user interface design, you know, it's direct manipulation, that what you're doing physically should correspond to the result you're trying to achieve. And I feel like Devil May Cry really does a good job of that in terms of, you know, the attacks, the button press is actually making sense. Kind of the same way Tekken tries to do with, you know, each of the buttons, you know, corresponding to a limb. And I don't know, I feel like that really separates it from, for example, some of the, like, God of War games where it's more you're entering combinations in order to pull off moves. So...
How is it in Devil May Cry?
Devil May Cry, basically, you know, forward attack generally does a dashing attack. Backwards an attack generally moves you up into the air. And then when you're in the air, forward attack moves you back to the ground.
Okay. So, David, from that standpoint, where would you rank like Heavy Rain as far as like controls matching the actions?
I've not played Heavy Rain. I have played some of Indigo Prophecy. I would say not particularly well. Why I say controls matching the actions, what I tend to mean is, for example, this would be like, for example, the idea that like pressing up an up arrow on a keyboard is better than typing in up, or like or like dragging and dropping, is, you know, that's what I mean, where like what you're doing is you're very directly physically manipulating something as opposed
to
what
you're saying is IF is bullshit.
What?
So what you're saying is interactive fiction is bullshit.
Maybe.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure you said that. Yeah.
My whole thing honestly is, at least for me, the control is not the game. So I don't like games where the controls get between me and the game, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
but like so in these examples that I that I hoped we would provide was like the it was unique, but it also melded and totally supported the story, right?
I agree. Yeah, I think pretty much all of these. I think are really good examples of that. I agree with that. I would say the games, and granted, to a certain degree, this was the point, but like games that try to do things kind of like that Deadliest Catch tend to annoy me, although in this instance, I think that was kind of the point.
Yeah.
They're developing me like, I hope this really annoys David.
Oh, no.
They just have pictures of you up, like in a most wanted kind of fashion all around the studio.
Oh, you should see my inbox. They send me taunts.
No. Like, you actually have legal claim for harassment. It's just out of courtesy that you don't go for it. Yeah, that's pretty funny. And then I'll go ahead and do mine. So Gary kind of snaked mine, like, because it is the most recent example, but Brothers is a really good example of that. And the example that I would give other than that is too spoilery to say. So like, let's say 9 hours, 9 persons, 9 doors, there is something to do with the two screens and the way that it's presenting information to you that like totally makes the two screen presentation into a part of the story in a way that you wouldn't expect. Right.
Huh.
So I can't go into that at length just because, you know, but what I will settle on, and this is kind of in line with Dennis's answer with the hardware based stuff, but Rock Band. Right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Specifically the drums. I would say that there was something that there was something that they had solved kind of with Guitar Hero there. But the overall illusion, and, you know, there's been plenty of ink and audio spilled about this, but like you gaining competence in this thing, and they dipped into it a little bit with the pro instruments, like the guitar, which worked pretty well. You creating that story by interacting with this through this unique means. You know, I would never say, oh, I play Rock Band drums, therefore I know how to play actual drums. I know it's more different, or I know that it is an entirely different thing. I would say that Rock Band is definitely something, you know, it is a unique control scheme that justifies a game, right?
Definitely.
And a game that justifies a unique control scheme, right?
And I would say drums are certainly not on par with the real thing, but they are much closer to the real thing than the guitars are. And like you said, the pro guitars that a little bit. I remember I was watching, and granted this was for, the Guitar Hero version, but one of the drummers from one of the bands that was collaborating on it said, like, I only wanted my song to be in the game if I could play it knowing the song without actually looking at the screen and actually do it, you know, perfectly. Mm-hmm. And he did so, and it was actually able to. And I thought that was really, really cool that they were able to emulate it that closely.
Yeah. There was a funny story. So, like, one of the earlier songs, I think it was, like, in 2008 or so, was a Nine Inch Nails song called "The Perfect Drug," which is really good. It's off of the Lost Highway soundtrack, so big ups on that. But it's one of the hardest songs on drums, really. And like after people perfected it, you know, like, you know, got 100% on it, like, which wasn't thought to be possible at the time. Trent Reznor was like, "What's the point of putting out more songs on this? Because people are just going to beat them." It's like, well, you don't understand that, like, you know, people are going to want to play this and, you know, get to know. You're like, nope. Like, it's that weird relationship with it, but yeah. Yeah, but I would say Rock Band. It's, it almost feels like a cop-out answer because that is, like, short of Steel Battalion, the one example that does require the most hardware investment.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially if you want to play with friends.
Yeah, for sure.
Ooh, that's actually a good call, though. Can I say, like, Microsoft Flight Sim?
you could be like somebody's, like, crazy Flight Sim dad who really just, like, the only video game they play is Flight Sim, and they have a gigantic four stick setup, and they do real time flights from New York to LA.
Ugh. Yeah, the you know, shuttle simulator at NASA. So that's a pretty good one.
America's Army totally joined up because of that. Yeah. So thank you everybody for participating. I know it was kind of an esoteric question, but I think that sometimes we can get weird with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, I like that one.
Yeah. So thank you.
Very cool.
Yeah. So if you want to participate in future ones, it's facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. And we'll get to more of that contact stuff later in
the credit.
And there we go. We're going to do the soundbite. Mm-hmm. So the 50th episode of this podcast has been strange. We, you know, decided, oh, there's not going to be anything really special about this episode. 50th, we're just going to continue to do the same quality of work we've been doing, get out there and just keep going at it. And then Dennis, changed everything with his awesome, like, world rocking announcement.
Drop and, mic, except I don't want to drop my mic. It's expensive and I don't want to ruin it.
Yeah. It's a condenser. You know, it's sensitive. It's sensitive equipment. I would say that alone is like the craziest thing, and we are all very happy about hearing that. So as I said, you know, we gave you the Facebook thing, facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. Leave your well wishes and such. We want you to come out in force, right?
Yeah, thanks.
Let us all celebrate this at once. 3, 2, 1. Yay! There you go. Thank you. Did you woohoo yourself, Dennis?
I woohooed myself.
Okay, cool. Not yourself.
Mom caught me woohooing myself once.
Oh, God. In The Sims. This is my Sim woohooing himself. Oh, no. It's so shameful. No, but... that's pretty big stuff. Other stuff you can do to kind of just support things. Check out the new and improved DuckFeed.tv. There are the shows in the network. Those Damn Ross Kids came back. The new episode came out just this week here, and we've got more coming down the line. So thank you for your patience as we got that ship righted, but it is back, at least for now.
All right.
And nice. Also, New Hexrick is coming eventually as I finish up Sweet Home. It's going to be a good article because it is a good game. And I want more people to read about it. There is duckfeed.tv/tipjar. If you're going to be buying any stuff off of Amazon, we get a cut of that. And that is a small little thing you can do to help keep the lights on here at the network. And otherwise, just keep being awesome. And send us any questions or discussion prompts you might have at duckfeed.tv/contact. Guys, was there anything I forgot?
I want to give one shout out to Humble Bundle, Sid Meier Humble Bundle
now. Yeah.
So check it out if you want to play all the Civ games.
Yeah. I'm about ready to pick that up. That is a really good deal for the Brave New World expansion that they have there. $15 for like all of that. Yeah, it's a good way to go. Yeah, the big ups on that. But yeah, so my name is Cole Ross, and I've been your host. I am at Cole Ross on Twitter. That's KOLERoss.
I'm Dennis Furia. I've been your bomb dropper. I am at D Furia on Twitter.
I'm David Meismith. I've been your curmudgeon. I'm at MoneySmith777 on Twitter.
I'm Ben Merkel, and I have no title, but I wish I was at on Twitter, but I'm at Merkelizer on Twitter.
Oh, man. And let's all welcome Llama Alpaca or Alpaca Llama Furia to this to this world. Good night, everybody. I'm a little bit low energy tonight, so I'm going to try my hardest to buck up. It may come across as overcompensation.
I'll do my best to pick up your spirits.
Okay. Well,
what's this about spirits?
I'm gonna sound very. No, don't take my spirits, Dennis. Yeah.